This episode of the Hope Podcast is brought to us by the Spotlight Project. The Spotlight Project is a fantastic organization run by fantastic people with the mission of raising employment for individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities. They create and sell beautiful jewelry, and each individual they employ has an intellectual or developmental disability and a unique story to tell. You can visit them at the Spotlight projectco.com. again, thespotlightprojectco.com. use the coupon code HOPE, H-O-P-E. Again, use the coupon code HOPE for 15% off your order.
This is part two of Having Everything Means Nothing with Steven Tita. If you haven't listened to part one, please check it out. If you guys could also please help us out by subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review if you enjoyed. And with that, I'll turn it over to Steve for part two.
Yeah, so and then just moving out past that decision, then to commit to St. John's, which is nearby, stay local with the girlfriend. Just from there, anything, rest of senior year, and then into the transition into the new environment of college.
Yeah, so my first experience of college didn't last long. So I was obviously, like most kids, like I was super anxious about going to college. Like, even though I was still home, like I was still like, new team, new school. Like, I've never done schoolwork, like, ever. Mm-hmm. So am I going to be able to do it? Like, how is this going to play out, right? I knew I was capable, but it was still something in the back of my mind, like, you've never done it, so maybe you can't do it. Like, maybe I'm someone that needs to, like, go learn a trade because I can't do school. Luckily, thank God, it wasn't the case. But so I went to St. John's, and the coach, like I said, was a Rockwell Center guy, so I don't know what he knew about me, like what he didn't know, but he obviously knew some shit happened because the second I didn't go to Fairfield, he was like, call me. And he was fucking awesome. So I went there doing like the D1 shit, like practicing twice a day, like life sucks, like whatever. I was honestly too busy and tired to even like process how I was feeling at the time. So it's August, September, whatever, it went okay. Like, I was still smoking. That was about it. Just going to practice and going to class and smoking a bit. And then I was kind of like end of September around my birthday. So my 19th birthday. I just went down. I was like, I can't do it anymore. So I was just lying to my family. So I would literally drive my car like a few blocks away, say I'm going to practice in school, and I would just sit in my car all day and smoke weed for like 7 hours. And then go home when it was like time to go. I should be home, right? And I didn't. I had so much anxiety about like telling the coach, like, hey, like what the fuck do I say? Like, I can't do it. And because he had been so good to me, he would like talk to me all the time. He's like, I'm here for you. Like, honestly, the best. Even though I only had him for a month and a half, let's say, he was the most like trying to be your friend type coach. Like, he really cared. And even when I made the decision, like, I'm dropping out of school, like, I'm going, like, away, like, for a long time. He was always, like, if you ever want to come back, like, you always have a place here. And he was kind of just made me feel like someone understood, and, like, he saw it past, like, he knew I was great at lacrosse, but he saw it past that. He was like, I don't care how good you are, like, you need to be happy and healthy. Like, you're a 19-year-old kid, like, and that was the first time it was more, like, about me than it was about me being fast and good at something, which I appreciated. I appreciate now to this day, honestly. Mm-hmm. So in like October, I dropped out. I got medical leave from school, luckily. So I didn't like, my record didn't look that bad. It looked like I just got sick. So my parents sent me down to a place in Florida. So this would have been my first like long-term rehab. So the place was a minimum of 90 days. I was there for 124 days because I was bad there. Like I said before, it was hard to accept any help. And like you said, when you were even trying to tell me about what you were going through, like you were like, oh, I'm not as bad as him, blah, blah, blah. When I went to places like that, I was like, wow, like I'm not even close to us. Like I wasn't shooting heroin, I wasn't smoking meth, like all these excuses for like why I shouldn't be there, right? Meanwhile, like I'm trying to kill myself, I'm cutting myself, like I belong there just as much as anyone else. So that was, my parents sent me there, super reluctant, and then I can talk about how that was, because that was like the first time, even though I had been away before, this was like a long time of being away. So it's way different experience.
Yeah, please dive into your experiences there, what they were, you know, what they were trying to teach you, and what you were feeling, what you were doing, any stories about, you know, you said you were bad there, like any stories about that?
Yeah. Yeah, so the place was in South Florida. It was a dual diagnosis long-term treatment. So that means is you could be there for mental health reasons or you could be there for addiction or like alcoholism. So most people that have an addiction or alcoholism, they're almost 99.9% of the time have underlying mental health issues, right? Mm-hmm. And the drugs are another way of that manifesting. So the place was great. It was super nice. Like I said, in South Florida. So the weather's fucking unbelievable. I'm just like, initially I'm just pumped to be in Florida. I'm like, this is fucking sweet. Like, I'm living at the beach. And then I get there and I'm like, I'm more like in a hospital, like a beautiful hospital. So I first get there, and I was the youngest kid there for sure. I was 19. Most people were probably like mid-20s, late-20s to like as high as like in their 50s, right? Mm-hmm. Most people were like 20s, 30s, like, so not too old. So that was nice for me. Even though I was a kid, I was like the baby of the place.
Right.
But initially I was like super reluctant. I was like, I don't fucking belong here. Like, we had to go to AA meetings every night. That was like one of the things we did. And that time I was like, what the fuck? Like, only old men who drink too much go to AA. I'm like, I just smoked a lot of weed. I had a period where I did some pills. Like, I don't belong here. Mm-hmm. So it took me a long time to like just let go and kind of accept like I need whatever I've been doing my way clearly isn't fucking working or I wouldn't be here. Right. So eventually I gave in and I let them help me. Or help myself, honestly. And that was where I kind of like shit that I didn't even remember happening from my childhood, like came up. Some like trauma, whatever. And that was kind of like the turning point of me being like, okay, I didn't even remember this happening. Like, what else is there that like, maybe I thought there was no reason why I was so depressed and anxious. Maybe there really are reasons. And I was just like blinded and young and it was just buried. My brain was just like protecting me from all this pain. So that this, at that place, it was kind of like, I learned so much more about myself than I ever could have in 4 months, like anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm still really good friends with a couple of the guys that I went there with, because you're living with them fucking 4 months straight, and I lived with them afterwards. But I said I had to stay longer because at the place it's like there's males and females, right? So the girls live on one side, guys live on another side. You go to groups together, you go to meetings separately most of the time. But there's like a strict no like fraternizing with the other gender there. And I'm 19. Me and my serious girlfriend had broken up at the time. And I was away, like, I would call her all the time, and she was doing shit that, like, obviously it broke my heart, but, like, what am I going to do? Like, I moved to Florida, basically. So she's moving on, doing her thing.
Right.
And I'm like, fuck, like, I feel terrible. And I was sick. I was essentially sick. So there was a couple cute girls there, whatever. Nothing, like, serious happened, but it was, like, kissing. And you think you can get away with it, but you're not, because there's cameras so fucking everywhere. So I got in trouble for that, and so that extended my stay, because I wasn't ready to let go and let God, as they said. But so their whole thing, my biggest takeaway from that place was more so just like accepting the fact that I feel the way I do, and I can't change anything else besides what I'm going to do now in the moment and what I'm going to do next. Like, what anything that happened before that, not that it's irrelevant, but I can't change it. So it happened. That the past is the past. And that helped. Like, I was super stuck in the past or too far in the future. I was never living in the moment. Mm-hmm. And that was something that, like, even now, like, I used to be a bit of a psycho. Like, even in sports, like, I was just a fucking hothead.
couple of red cards here and there. I recall.
Yeah. Cursing out my father, like cursing out everyone who wasn't me. Like, it was just bad, right? So, but now it's like, you can't get me mad. And like, I just don't get mad. Like, I get mad like anyone else, but I'm not going to freak out. I'm very grounded now. And I think I attribute a lot of that to being there for so long. Cause like, there was no way out. There was nothing to do other than to learn. And like, I would do yoga like 4 days a week. Started working out again, like just getting sun. Like, for me, even now, like the sun, I'm just a happier person. And I think most people would probably stay the same. I did so much better. That was like my natural medication, just like getting serotonin from the sunlight. And it was the first time I was probably ever on medication for like more than a month, because I would just take myself off it beforehand. But there, they like watch, take the pill, whatever.
So it sounds like that was just like the first time you really accepted and admitted that you had a problem. Like, yeah. Like in the moment, like, I know, like looking back, you said in high school, like you had a problem, but in the moment, like at that point, at that facility, was the first time you just admitted, like, I actually do need help.
Yeah. I think because it was like, I was like, oh fuck, like I'm here. Like, you don't accidentally end up at places like that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
As much as I wanted to justify, like, oh, this person was shooting heroin, this person was smoking crack, like, and I was like, I'm not doing those drugs necessarily, but the way I was using, like, just smoking weed was the same as that other person using a needle. Like, it didn't matter what I was using, it was why I was using it, right? So, like, I felt super sad and super anxious, so I needed to do this to, like, feel better for an hour of the day, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, like, it opened my eyes, because then I went to these meetings. And like I said in the beginning, I didn't think I belonged. And I don't go to meetings now, for the record, or anything like that. I'm not part of like that community. I have my own like way of living. It's not too far from it, but it's not fully into like in 12-step program. Sure. But I would listen to a lot of the meetings where like people telling their stories, and I was like, fuck, like that sounds just like me. Like, and I just related so much, and I think that, even though I always knew I wasn't alone, everyone's like, oh, you're not alone, you're not alone. And I was like, cool, but I feel alone. So, like, fuck you. Like, it doesn't matter. But hearing people that were, like, 21, 22, I'm 19 at the time, so kids around my age that are, like, have been good for a couple years and had super similar stories to me, I was like, fuck, like, this is, like, super powerful to hear. A young guy in college, like, clean and sober, who had a similar life to me beforehand. I remember specifically there was this one guy who came to the rehab. We'd have like guest speakers type thing, mm-hmm. like once in a while. He came. He was a Long Island guy, probably 24 at the time. Had played Division I lacrosse. So like immediately I was interested, because at the time like that was my identity. At that time was pretty much I was good at sports. Like that's who I was. Right. So he told his story, and it just resonated with me. And he was like the first. I got his number, like I reached out to him, and I started like working the 12 steps through AA or whatever with him. And that was like, that was the biggest help. Everything, like the place was great, like the therapy was all, I needed all of that. But this was something like, it wasn't therapy, but I could talk to him the same way and not feel judged or anything. And it made me feel like, all right, if he could get through all that shit, which was like, that's way worse than me. Like, I can do it too. So I followed with him he was my sponsor. I went through the 12 steps with him, all of them. And eventually had my own, I was sponsoring people for a little bit. But that was my first experience with someone like, outside of a therapist, like really being like a support net, like a support group. Cause he introduced me to other people that were super similar to him. Mm-hmm. Obviously that was like him. So I got along. And it was like a little group of people that were all fucked up in our own way, but all like getting through it together, right? So the 4 months, it was about 4 months I was at that place. And the way it worked was, once you were done living there, you'd have to like go live in, they're called halfway houses. I know we have them here, but I think a lot of them are more like if you've been to jail type shit.
Right.
So down there, like for those of you who don't know or that are listening, South Florida, specifically Delray Beach, is like the number one hotspot in the country for people in recovery. So like most people you meet down there have been to rehab or are in in some kind of recovery. So you live in a halfway house, and then eventually you transition to living on your own or whatever.
Right.
So I went to a halfway house with the two guys that I mentioned that I became pretty good friends with. We all went to the same house. Again, super privileged. It was I lived in a nice house near the beach. And you had to stay there for a minimum of 6 months after. So this is pretty much a full year of, even though it's out of rehab, you're still in it. We had a curfew. We had you had to get a job within X amount of time, to do to stay in the house, essentially. They had all these rules. So I did that. And I ended up getting a job at the first Lacrosse Unlimited that opened in Florida. So I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. It made me feel oh, I'm going to be normal again. Because at that time, it was all right, I'm 19. I dropped out of college. And we're the town we come from, not ideal to everyone does their 4 years. You move on. Maybe you get some big time job in the city, and that's your life. You do what your parents do, whatever the fuck you do.
Yep.
So this was breaking the mold, and I felt a fucking stranger. But it was the best thing for me, honestly. As much as I hated it at times, because obviously it's not it was all fucking amazing. A lot of it was super, super painful.
Right.
In the end, it was even to this day, probably the best experience I've had, even if I resented my parents for sending me there, hated everyone around me for a time being, but it was really incredible. And the halfway house, leading into that, I guess. So I got a job pretty quick, and then I met a girl that worked there that was a local girl, and we started dating, and that was just a full year and a couple months where I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't do anything. I was just working and going to the beach and whatever, enjoying life again, really. The first time I felt genuinely happy probably since fucking middle school, maybe, 6th, 7th grade. For a long period. Obviously, there was times where I was happy throughout high school, but a long period of sustained happiness.
And you were sober during this?
Yeah, so I was still once I was in the halfway house, I was still going to meetings occasionally. I was still working with a sponsor and sponsoring people, but it was definitely less. I kind of still didn't buy into the full I need to be in AA. I knew I needed to live differently than my friends, right? But I didn't necessarily think I needed to live the way they were,
right?
Because it was in a way for at least for me. I know it helps so many people that I love. It's helped tremendously, being in the AA or NA, whatever it is. But just it wasn't. I got more through just the relationships I made through those programs than the actual program itself. Sure. Yeah, so absolutely. I kept those relationships with people, and that helped me. And I was obviously still going to therapy and whatever, and having a new girlfriend that was that helped for that time. I mean, it wasn't long lasting or anything, but at the time it was exactly what I needed, because she was not a party or anything. It was just my first normal experience with people without drugs and drinking. It was everything in high school was going to the party, going to this party, going to this party, going to the bridge,
got the 12 pack, the lunchbox.
Yeah, exactly. Got my Natty Lights, I'm good to go. Natty Lights and a Dutch, and I'm happy.
And then so from there, I know from the outside, again, looking in, I didn't know the full story was going on. I know you were down there in rehab, and then you went back to school for a little while.
Yeah. So I got out of the halfway house. So I got out of the rehab in February. I moved into the halfway house right away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was 6 months. So I got to August or whatever it was. And everyone was kind of my therapist at the time and the halfway house were don't rush going back to school. And I mentioned, coming from our town, it's hard to, I felt, even though it was only 1 year, I felt so far behind. I was all my friends are gonna graduate and I'm gonna be this reject that's still in school or whatever. So I got out of the halfway house in August and I was moving out with one of the buddies that I met in the rehab, and we went through the halfway house. So I had known him for like a year now, and he was close to my age, and we were like best friends. I like attached at the hip, basically. Still friends with him to this day. I love him to death. Great guy. Minnesota guy. But so we got an apartment together, and he also, he was a little bit older, but he still had some school left. I think he had like, I don't know, 2 years, a year and a half left on to finish his degree. And I obviously had all 4 years left because I left right away. And everyone around me was like, don't rush it, like, bad idea. And I was like, no, like, I'm doing great. I've been good for a year. Like, what's the fucking worst that could happen? So we move out into, like, essentially it was like a college. It was an apartment complex full of college kids. I'm living in Florida. I decided to go to a school called Lynn University because they had a brand new lacrosse program. It was like the, I think it was like the second year they had a program or the first year. D2, and I was like, this will be fine. D2, like, I won't, stress free. I'll go there. I called the coach immediately. He like looked me up and it was like, yeah, absolutely, like, come play. Okay. So I was pumped about that. Because the only two options were go to Lynn or go to Florida Atlantic University, which is like a big state school.
Right.
And I was like, that'll be a disaster because I don't need to be at a big party school. So I go against everyone's word. And my parents were kind of like, they were okay with me going to school because they obviously want me to go to get my education. So my plan is to do that. And also my roommate going to the same school. So we're like, fine, we're set. Got an apartment, we're going to school. I came home for like a little bit before school. I don't know, like maybe like a week or so, just to see my friends and everything. Didn't do anything. I didn't drink anything. Went back to my apartment. School's starting. Super excited, like, new people, new experience. Like, I'm going to put the whole rehab thing behind me. I'm going to try to, like, not do any drugs or drink, but I'm not going to, like, I'm detaching myself from that community. I'm going to be a college student, like, a normal college student.
Mm-hmm.
And South Florida, a lot of cocaine in South Florida. So, I don't think I had ever seen it growing up in Rockwell Center. Like, I didn't, the kids weren't doing that in high school and shit, so, like, I didn't even, obviously, I knew what it was, but like, I didn't know what it did, or like, I didn't see people doing it. But probably right before I would have started school, people, like, it was around, and I tried it, and that was it. That was probably the first time I did a drug, and I was like, I love this shit. Like, that was amazing. At the time, like, obviously, it was awful, but for me, it was like, I had only done like pills and all that shit that was like downers, so it was kind of just like I would just go to sleep essentially. And this was like, I feel so happy, like I've never been so happy. Little did I know that fades away, and then you feel like absolute garbage. And being depressed naturally, add that drop from a high of cocaine to your normal level being even lower, it was just bad. So I needed to keep doing it just to like feel okay.
Right.
But I started playing fall ball for lacrosse for the school. And again, I had a lingering injury from high school, so it kind of just like, I was half-assed practicing a little bit. And then eventually, after like a month, I was like, I didn't love the sport anymore. And I just stopped. I stopped like fighting it. I felt like I needed to play just because I'd been an athlete my whole life and it was such a big part of who I am. But I from that year being in rehab and the halfway house, like I grew a lot to be like, I don't need the sport anymore to define who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I dropped it and whatever. That was one positive thing. But I started doing the cocaine, like I said, and I had never done schoolwork before. So that first semester, I got like a 1.3 GPA. My parents were like, what the fuck? And I was like, what the fuck? Because you have to try to get a 1.3. Like, you can't get a 1.3 if you go to class. Like, I didn't go to any class and do any work. Like, mm-hmm. They just passed me, I guess, because whatever. They just wanted me to pass. So that was, like, the next big, like, wake-up call, let's say, of, like, okay, if I'm going to do school, like, I can't just do what I'm doing. So I stopped doing anything. I wasn't drinking. I pretty much just wasn't going out. I was playing video games and going to school. That was like what I did for the spring semester. And at this time I had a new girlfriend, fucking toxic as shit. So it was just bad. Because anytime we'd get into a fight or whatever, like, it was just like, oh, I'll just do more drugs or I'll get drunk.
Right.
So we broke up. I stopped doing drugs, stopped drinking, I pretty much stopped living life. Like, I went to school and I went to my apartment, and that was all I did. And it's like, it was super depressing, and I definitely wasn't happy, but like, I did really well that semester. So I was like, you know what, fuck it. If I have to suck it up and like live a shitty life for a little bit, it's going to be worth it in the long run.
Right.
So that's what I did for the spring. And then I was like, all right, I went home for the summer, like a normal college student does. And I mean, I think I drank and maybe smoked a little bit, but nothing crazy. And then me and my buddy who I lived with, we got a new apartment, like out of like college setting, because it was just like a normal apartment complex with like families and not a college scene. So I was like, all right, it'll be good. I'm not going to be partying. Like, it's not going to be the same. My ex-girlfriend that I said that was really toxic lived directly across the way in that apartment complex from me. So there was like, we got back together. And then again, me and my roommate, like, I got into, like, we went to a couple of parties, coke was around again. I was like, I'll do it a couple times, won't be a big deal. So I did it again, got hooked. And it was pretty much just I had like 2 or 3 weeks before the semester started when I went back to Florida. And all I did was do coke and try to sleep. I didn't really sleep, so I was just doing coke like all day. And I was like, I'll fuck around until once school starts, I'll stop. So the weekend before I have class Monday, it's Friday. I'm like, this is my last hurrah. Like, I'm going to have a great night, go out, get totally fucked up, do all the coke in the world. And then Monday is going to come and I'm magically just going to stop doing that. But this was like probably the biggest point in my life, because I was doing coke all day, and then I was having such bad anxiety because, like, I had like heart palpitations because I was so strung out from doing too much of it, like, for too long. So I got some Xanax to, like, calm me down or whatever. So I took that, and then the next thing I know, I woke up in jail. So I don't remember any of that happening, obviously, because the Xanax made me, like, black out. Because the last thing I remember, I was home. I had it. I was like, take these, go to bed. Like, can't try to go to bed. And then clearly I didn't. So I got in my car. Apparently I was like driving to Miami and like, this is like 3 in the morning. I have no idea what I was doing going to Miami or why. Mm-hmm. I had a bag packed with just like a bathing suit and a bag of coke. And like, this is going to like, what I had no idea what I was trying to do. Right. I'm so out of my mind. So I apparently never even left the town I lived in, which is Boca Raton. So I drove around Boca Raton for like 3 hours. Like, dude, I have no idea. So eventually I blew a red light, got pulled over, and the cop was just like, Jesus Christ, like, you look so fucked. So he did like the whole sobriety test. I obviously failed the shit out. I hadn't been drinking, by the way, but obviously I had enough drugs in my system to put a horse to sleep. So like, I failed the shit out of that. And I tried to blame. I remember the only thing I do remember from that was I was like, oh, because I had a torn hamstring. I was like, I can't walk straight because my leg is so fucked up. And he was like, look at me. And he was like, that's not why.
Sir, no.
Yeah. But, so they took me there. And this was like, it's fun. Like, I can laugh at it now because it's like, it's 5 years ago. Like, it's just fucking funny.
Right.
But, so I went to jail. And I guess they asked me a bunch of, like, intake questions as if I was at a hospital. Like, how are you feeling? Like, are you suicidal at all? And my dumbass was like, well, if you keep me here, like, yeah, I'm going to kill myself. So they put me in, like, the psych ward of jail. And this is, like, ghetto. The jail that it was like, a bad jail, like, yeah, for Florida. And here I am, this little white kid. Like, I have all these tattoos. People are going to think I'm, like, are going to think I'm, like, something I'm not, you know? Yeah. But I just end up in, like, this little psych ward. I'm probably in a smaller than your closet room. Jesus. Just concrete, naked, ass butt naked. All they gave me was a paper towel to cover my stuff and lay down there.
Were you naked when you were driving? Or
they no, they take they strip you so you can't hang yourself with like your shorts or your string or nothing.
Oh my god.
So I'm like that, and all you can do is just like, I just freaked out. Like, I was banging the wall, like breaking my hands, like just punching everything, like thinking I'm gonna get out of a steel fucking like door, like dumb as shit. And eventually I crash and I fall asleep for a couple hours. So I wake up, I'm like, all right, now what? Like, I have no idea what's going on. It's like, do my parents know? Like, does my roommate know? Like, who knows what the fuck is going on? Because I couldn't make a phone call at the time because I was too fucked up. They're probably like, this kid doesn't know how to dial. Like, I didn't even know what I was doing. So eventually they have like a psychologist on staff, I guess, or someone, I don't know what she was, some mental health person on staff at the jail to like come talk to me and like question, see if I'm stable. Because it turned out my parents like did like reach out to a lawyer and like a bail to get me out. But they can't release you if you're suicidal, obviously, because it's the same way as a hospital. They can't release you until you say you're not.
Right.
So obviously I'm like, yeah, I'm not, whatever. So they finally give me fucking clothes, or pants at least, like jail clothes, whatever. And I'm in like a little bit bigger room with like four other dudes that are also naked, which is like, they had blankets. And I was like, why didn't I get a blanket? I just got a paper towel. And they probably were just like, fuck this kid, because I was being a psychopath. But yeah, so I'm just laying there, and I'm like, and my whole thought was like, wow, I have school on Monday. Like, I hope I get out by Monday. I'm like, it's got to be at least Thursday. And then I asked the person, I was like, what time is it? And she was like, 2:30. And I was like, on what day? She was like, Saturday. And I was like, what? I've only been here for like 20 hours. I was in that little fucking closet-sized room for like a day. And I thought I was there for like 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why. But like obviously no clock or nothing. And I was just like strung out, and I had no idea what and all I kept doing was like taking naps.
Was there a window?
No, God, no.
That's insane.
All there was a metal toilet that I sat on to sleep because like I couldn't even lay down. It was, and I'm not a big guy, if you can tell, but I'm 5'7", 5'8", whatever.
They don't give you, there's not like a anywhere you can sit or
the toilet, yeah. The toilet or the floor. So I got, like I said, I got to the bigger room, and then that was kind of like, eventually you get out or whatever. Once I got to speak to the psychologist. But that was kind of like, that fucked me up. I remember sleeping for the next like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I slept in like sweatshirt, sweatpants, full socks. Like, I mean, I live in Florida. It's fucking 90 degrees out. And I'm like, I felt so vulnerable being like naked for that long. And just like, I felt fucking violated. Like,
what an absolutely trash way to treat a human being.
Yeah, I hope they change that, because that was just fucked.
I think these are some of the things we need to talk. It's important to hear. Like, I would never in a million years think that that's how they would treat someone who clearly has a mental health issue going on, and they'll put you in a dark room in solitary confinement naked and treat you like trash.
Yeah, I think it was like I've been to half a dozen psych wards that, all of them are nice, but like this was a jail psych ward, so it was, and in Florida, so you know they're funding shit, and it was just, oh my god,
bad.
That was definitely like my worst experience of like being anywhere. Now the next time I went to a hospital, like, this is amazing, like I love it,
yeah,
because that was just awful. Yeah, I don't. It almost felt like once I like stepped away, so I was like kind of traumatized from it, but after like months went by, I was like, how is that legal? Like, and I can't imagine the way they treat other people. Like, I got a bed, but I'm sure it's way worse for other people. Like,
yeah, people out on the street are probably in there regularly. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the guys I was in that big room with, he was like, I'm here every weekend. I was like, that's not great. But no, yeah, he was just like, he just had a drug problem. That's all he had. Like, he needed rehab. He didn't need to be locked in, like, treated inhumanely in a jail. You know what I mean? Like, that was the kind of shit that opened my eyes and was like, part of why I wanted to be a lawyer, because I was like, this is just fucked. Like, these people don't need jail. He's not hurting anyone. He's not even stealing. He just, like, got caught with some drugs on him. Like, he needs help. And this is not helping. Like, it's doing the opposite. So I didn't miss any school like I thought I did, because I was like, new semester. Like, I had really good grades in the spring, so I was like, I got to continue it.
Bright side.
Yeah, well, all I could think about was, like, I need to be at school. Like, what the fuck? People are going to be like, where the fuck is this kid?
Yeah.
But obviously, I guess the night that I had gotten arrested, I was, like, I put up some, like, Snapchat stories. I had some really questionable text messages, like, because I didn't know what the fuck was going on. And I don't remember doing it, but people were like, yeah, it was not good. And I was like, that's not good.
Yeah.
So that was embarrassing for sure. But I had to quickly get over that, because I was like, new semester, gotta get going.
Right.
But then the court, my lawyer was like, well, you have to go to rehab. Otherwise, like, the charges will stay. And I was like, well, I can't have a record. Again, my white privilege showing off that I've never been arrested, whatever. So I pretty much just got away with murder. Like, I got away with a slap on the wrist. Like,
yeah.
So I had to go away to rehab again. This was like a 2-month rehab. And it was a reason I went to this one. It was designed so you could stay in school and like still live in the rehab and go to rehab. You could only take a couple classes, but I was like, it's better than nothing. But the place was an absolute fucking joke. Like, I wouldn't. It actually closed. But I mean, the people were good people. It was just run. It was so hard because everyone was 19 to like 23. So it's such a hard age to deal with in general. Add in addiction, add in school. Like, it was too much. Like, most people, you need to just be in full like rehab. Like, so I did my 2 months there. And then they tried to send me, like, they had like their own halfway house, and the court was like, yeah, you got to do that and do, like, it's called IOP, so intensive outpatient. Mm-hmm. So I just left in like the middle of the night and just moved in with my girlfriend at the time, which was fucking ballsy and really dumb, because I could have easily, like, I wouldn't have like gone to jail, but like, it would have, my legal thing, it just would have been way worse if like I got caught technically. But luckily I had my therapist at the time that got me into that place that was like super well respected in the area. He like wrote some huge letter to the court, and like got the trade-off was like me seeing him once or twice a week was the same as like being in like this therapy that the court was like, he needs this.
Mm-hmm.
So thank God that worked out. He saved my ass big time. But yeah, so I moved in with her, and honestly, like, as much as it sucked and being in that jail cell for like what felt like 2 weeks, even though it was like 3 days, it woke me the fuck up, because I was like, I thought I had it figured out the year prior. I was like, I'm doing great. Like, I'm sober. Like, going back to school. Like, everything was starting to fall into place, and then it just blew up in my face. Like, I couldn't even imagine, because I'm not like, I don't know. I didn't think of myself as like a criminal. Like, being arrested is like, whoa, like, no, never me. Like, that's never gonna happen to me, right? And then all of a sudden, I wake up in jail. But it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because I was definitely someone that needed, like, I needed to be shaken up like that. Because like, I went to rehab and sure, it woke me up like, oh, I need help. But this was like, your life is going to go this way or you're going to go this way. And that was like, you're going down a super dark path if you keep doing what you're doing.
So it was kind of like rock bottom for you.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I hit rock bottom when I tried to kill myself a couple times. But this was definitely like real rock bottom. And it's worked, because since then I've done well. So like, I as much as I hated it and it sucks that it happened, because it's obviously like, no one wants to get fucking arrested. Like, it's just so embarrassing, so much shame. But at the same time, it's like a blessing in disguise. Like, I don't know if I'd be where I'm at today if that didn't happen. Yeah. Like,
well, I'd say regret. You know, it's something you regret, but we can't change the past, and there's no shame in our past, because you were doing the best you could with the life experiences you had and with what was going on in your head and in your life, and there's a shame in that.
So now I was living with my girlfriend and just going to therapy. So the therapist was awesome. He helped me tremendously. It's like, for that year, I'd say, that we lived together, it was actually like awesome, because I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I smoked a bunch of cigarettes, but like, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't like partying or anything, because she knew that I was like, I couldn't, so we didn't go out, we kind of just hung out all the time. So at that time, it helped. And I would see my therapist, I think I would go to him twice a week just to like, whoever he talked to at the court system was like, he needs to at least see you twice a week to fill the void for the outpatient. So I was like, fine, that's so much better to me. So that would have been like the winter of my sophomore year, so your junior year. And I was good through that whole like summer. We lived together and I was fine. Didn't drink, didn't do anything. And I kind of continued that way, honestly. We stopped living together before my junior year started. We were going to get a place together. It didn't work out. That happened. We were on and off for the remaining 2 years of I was at school there. Mm-hmm. But I kind of kept living. I didn't really live my life there. I would go to the beach. I would surf. And I just like sometimes. And then I would really just go. I would just go to school and go home. Go to school, go home. Go to school, go home. Like it wasn't, definitely wasn't the normal college experience. I had friends at the school, but I wasn't going out anymore. So it was kind of like, more like friends in passing. Like I wasn't hitting them up to go out. They weren't hitting me up to like come out.
Yeah.
It was really just, I'd hang out with my girlfriend and I would go, or I would go to school and I would just be alone. So, and I was always someone, even growing up, I don't know if you'd even remember this, but I needed to be, if there was ever a play day, like I needed to be there. Like I could not be alone for 5 fucking minutes.
Right.
And my mom will attest to that. She's like, you just couldn't stop. And I was like, yeah. But so this was the first time I was really like alone. Like I was alone. If it wasn't that class, I was alone basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds super depressing and it kind of was, but I found like, I really just got super into video games, even though that's pretty unhealthy. But for me at the time, it was like my saving grace because it was as unhealthy as you want to call video games. It was better than me going out and doing other shit. So, like, it saved me in a way because it kept me entertained and I wasn't bored. That's kind of how I lived the rest of school, right? So I kind of like I made a couple friends, a couple girls that came and went, whatever, mm-hmm. shit like that, just to like. Be a 21-year-old guy. Like I needed to have some kind of interaction with people.
Right.
But that was the best thing that ever happened because then I ended up getting just like I got 4 O's pretty much straight out for the last like 2.5-3 years of school. So that 1.3 I had the first semester kind of erased itself, and I had a good GPA, graduated with honors, all this shit. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely like. I regret that I didn't have, like, I know you had such a great college experience, like, you have such good friends, and, like, I'm over it now, but, like, when we first graduated, I was like, damn, like, I don't have that. Like, I have, like, maybe one or two friends that, like, from school that I would really, like, reach out to this day, you know, being yeah. a couple years out. But in the end, it was, like, it was my path, and it was what I needed to do, and it really did work out that way. I mean... Would I have done things differently? Yeah. But where I am now, I wouldn't change for the world. So, like, I think it helped me grow a lot. I was, like I said, I couldn't be alone. Now, like, I'm so good at being just, like, at peace all the time. I mean, it doesn't really matter if I am alone or if I'm with a big group of people. Like, I'm pretty introverted now. Like, I don't go out a ton. But I like it that way. I mean, I like my life calm. My life was so crazy for so long that it's like, I'm just so over it. Like, I'm so content. Not doing nothing, but I don't need a lot to feel okay anymore. But yeah, I think that.
That's I so powerful, the entire story. And just the ending, too, I think is just amazing. It's like... you know, growing up and all this time in high school and growing, you know, on the outside looking in, you had everything and everyone said you had everything and the pressure that comes with that. And you felt miserable and to the point where you felt nothing.
Yeah.
And fast forward to hitting your rock bottom and taking steps to better your life, asking people for help, going, you know, and just being able to stay on that path forward. And it culminating not in this, you know, theatric fireworks life, but just a calm
yeah.
life where you're content with what you have, right. whatever that might be. And living in the present, you mentioned earlier, being able to live in the present, whether that's playing a video game, hanging out with your girlfriend or, you know, at a bar with a bunch of your friends, being able to live in the present and focus on what you're doing right now instead of being sad about the past, guilty, yeah. ashamed about the past or anxious about the future. So inspiring. We're in that first facility and everyone had these major problems. We kind of felt like your problems didn't measure up. They weren't valuable enough to speak about or for you to consider yourself at this level of addict. And you know, I really appreciate how you even drew back to what I said to you earlier. Like, when I was having my problems, right, at that time, I felt like my problems aren't as bad as his. I don't want to bring it up to him, but that's how we all feel. It's almost like we just don't value ourselves enough. You said privilege a bunch, which is another thing with everything that's going on. People are very touchy with the word privilege, especially white privilege. It's not like your problems don't matter. Your problems do matter. A lot of that stuff didn't go on the record.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that what was going on in his head wasn't severe. It just means that certain privileges he has, other people don't have. And it's important to recognize that. And there's no shame or in anything like that. There's no shame in the fact that it's not on your record. Yeah.
It's also like a huge problem in the country. Like, I'm lucky enough where my parents could afford me to send me to those places, but there could be, doesn't matter what color you are, if you're from a different socioeconomic status and you are having the same problems I was having, but your parents don't have the luxury of sending you to those places. And unfortunately, a lot of the government-run, state-run facilities are not good. Like, they're not really going to, like, maybe it'll help some people, but it's too expensive to get the care that you need, right? So, like, I was lucky enough to get great care. Other people won't be so lucky. And I think that's just a systematic issue within this country regarding mental health. Like, there just needs to be way more funding to help people that are in similar position as me that just can't afford it because I was lucky enough and they're not, you know?
Yeah. What we're talking about around privilege is, let's bring everyone up to this level of privilege where everyone can afford that level of care.
Yeah.
Or where one mistake, one arrest when you're 19 or 15 or 16 doesn't ruin the rest of your life, where you're then seen as a criminal by every employer, by every school, and can't better your life. You can't make that transformation that Steve made and so many other people I've talked to throughout this process and will continue talking to can make to better their lives. And look at him now. Look at that privilege has led to him being becoming a therapist and the amount of people he's going to help, not only with this story, getting the story out there, but in his own private practice or whatever he decides to go into, and all of his passions outside of that. And that's why privilege is important. And we want to bring everyone up to this level of privilege, but everyone has to acknowledge that we have, that it exists. And it's so important. Just like you have to acknowledge that you have a problem, we have to acknowledge that there's a problem in this country, that some people are less privileged than us in areas, we cannot allow people to be less privileged in to have a functioning society, valid social contracts across the board.
Right.
And so I know it's a little off topic from what we're talking about, but you just said it so many times. And listen, life is hard, and some things you just accept. Not everyone's going to be able to afford, you know, the big house and whatnot. But everyone should be able to afford help.
Yeah, basic health care, mental health help, whatever you need. It's like I said, I'm lucky enough where I was able to get it, but I know plenty of people that aren't.
Yeah.
Either your insurance doesn't cover it, you don't have insurance, you have to pay it. Like those nice facilities, you have to pay out of pocket. Who has $120,000 to send their kid to rehab? Not many people. Like, it's just insane.
It's insane. You know, just talk about the race one. You know, such a problem with little minor infractions when these kids are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Yep. Being on their records for the rest of their lives, they can't get jobs. And then they start believing, what's the point? Let's just, fuck it.
It becomes a vicious cycle.
Vicious cycle. And all those people have so much potential to make their piece of the world a little better and tilt the world to the good.
Absolutely. I think it's something like I have a year left for my master's. Once I become a licensed therapist and everything, like, definitely something I want to be able to help the underprivileged people that just can't get the help that I was so lucky and fortunate enough to have, that deserve it just as much as I did. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people in my class that feel the same way. So I think we're trending towards getting there, but it's going to take time and a lot of effort from people that have the same mindset.
It takes human connection, so much power in human connection, but we have to do it together. We can't do anything alone. A few like last questions, kind of like overall philosophy and stuff. You would come back and, we'd be drinking. How would you recommend, like, looking back, what was best? Us just pretending like it's one of the guys coming home from college or us treating you differently?
I think it's a good question because it's really hard. I think it's really hard. Like, I didn't expect anything from you, like my friends, because like we were young. Like, what do you really do? Like, you can, what are they gonna do? Tell me no? Like, I don't know. I'll probably just hit you in the, like, what am I gonna do? Like, I'm gonna drink if I want to drink. I'm gonna smoke if I want, you know.
Right.
So I think it's like, I think the way our friends handled it was awesome because it kind of just felt like people were just pumped to see me again. Like, obviously everyone wanted me to be happy and healthy. And like I would come home and I would drink, but I never really got like, I was kind of just like having a couple beers. I was usually not getting like fucked up or anything.
Right. So
I think it depends, like, I think it depends on the person, right? So like if you had a friend that you knew was super, like their addiction was very intense and what they were doing, then like you kind of, if they're your close friend, you should probably like make sure they don't do shit. But I think it was a little different with me because I think my friends at least knew that it was more mental health than it was drugs, even though there was rumors that it was like all these drugs, right? But like I think the people that knew me as a person knew that it was a combination of the two, right? So I think it was good to just be like, I miss this guy, like he's one of my close friends, like let's just have a good time. If he's gonna have a couple beers, whatever, as long as it doesn't get past that, whatever, you know.
What advice would you give to you know, high school Steve, or you know, call him Joe, high school Joe out there who's feeling like you did, feeling numb, and what would you tell him?
I think it would have helped me a lot, like, because I'm like you said, like you were going through your own shit too, and like I was so blinded by my own shit that I couldn't even imagine like, oh, other people are struggling too. I got so selfish, right? I think it would just be like, don't, I know it's so hard to reach out, and but if you just tell one person that you can trust, whether it's your school guidance counselor, a teacher, a parent, a friend, like a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever it is, because that just like, even before I got real therapy, just telling other people, it just helped so much to like, because you're holding so much in and it's so hard. Being young, if you're old, it doesn't matter. You got to talk to somebody, even if it's not traditional therapy, like you got to get it out. It's going to eat you alive if you keep it in. And just be patient with yourself, because the change that you want and the way you want to feel, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a week. It's not going to happen in a month. Like it takes time to do these things and change your way of thinking, change your behaviors. It's going to take effort from you too. I guess my big thing would be just be open to new things, because it's going to be uncomfortable and it's going to be hard. But if you genuinely want to get out of feeling that way, like it's no one's going to do it for you. And I think I was always like, my therapist isn't helping me, but like, what am I doing? I'm not doing what she says. I'm not practicing these skills. I'm not doing this or that. Like, as much as people can help you, you yourself still have to help yourself. Like, mm-hmm. They're just a facilitator of change. You need to be like, you need to also be the change yourself. And I think I took me a long time to accept that no one's going to cure me. I need to work with someone, work with a group of people to get better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that just being open, and then just not being too hard on yourself, right? Like, it's so easy to get down on yourself and whatever, if it's sports, it's drama, it's school, what friends. I mean, a million reasons why you could pick on yourself and tell yourself why you don't matter. But everyone matters. You do matter. And you got to find those people that genuinely, there's always, even if it's just your mom or your dad or your brother or sister, someone genuinely loves the shit out of you and will want to get you out of that place, right? So even if it's just that one first step, take the first step and don't be scared to keep on taking those steps, right? And I think that's what I would, for me personally, I would have been like, don't transfer and don't smoke weed, but right, like that's not realistic. So
it's not realistic, and important parts of your story. Just to piggyback off of that, like for other people out there who may not be going through this, or even if they are, be that person that someone can trust. I know, especially in high school, everyone's insecure and everyone's looking to be, you know, popular and have the thing to talk about. And if someone ever comes to you and opens up to you, don't gossip, don't, you know, be that person that someone can lean on and be there to help them and just listen, have empathy. I think that's the biggest thing. Find common ground. And if you can't empathize with exactly how they're feeling, their life experiences, maybe you don't understand that, but you can understand the feelings of, you know, feeling left out, feeling rejected, being in the anxiety of new situations, feeling down, just sad. We all feel sad from time to time, and exactly. Some people more than others. But the last thing, and then I'll let you go, because this has been unbelievable two-part series. The last thing, just what drives you forward now? What's your why? What makes you excited to get up in the morning?
Yeah, so now it's like, now that I can confidently say like I'm on the other side of all that shit. Like obviously I still have my days, I still have anxiety, like I still get anxious, but it's controlled. It's more like every day, average person anxiety. Like, I'm nervous for the first day of work. I'm nervous for this presentation I have to do for school, right? But now that I'm halfway through my master's and, like, I'm working towards helping people and doing, making steps towards, like, my career in that, now it's just focused on, like, okay, I've had my, hopefully, all of my, most of my bad stuff has happened, right? And now it's just helping people that have been in my shoes or in similar shoes, just trying to get the message out there that, like, there's help out there and people care. Like, and I think for me, my big focus, at least while I'm still young, will be to help, like, high school, college age kids, just because that's when I had my own issues. So I can relate more, and I'm more in tune with that age group than I would be, let's say, with someone who's 40 for now, while I'm still young, you know. I don't think a 40-year-old would want to talk to me. But what gets me out of bed is just that fact that I'm working towards that goal of being a licensed therapist and being able to help people, as many as I can. And that's just what I've wanted to do pretty much since I was, like, 17. Even though I thought of other careers, it was ultimately always what I saw my mom doing it, and I was like, that's, I want to do that. I want to be like that. I think that was, like, the coolest thing ever, to be able to help people day in, day out. And it wouldn't feel like a job. It would just be like, it's a passion of mine. I want to see people happy. And if I can help, great. If I can't, I hope I can help you find someone else that can. Mm-hmm. So I think that's my biggest motivation, is just seeing more people get to the other side. Because I've seen so many friends not make it. And it's just, like, it's heartbreaking. And you don't want to see that, you know.
Helping others, the most powerful why we can all have. And I just want to say, as a friend, as a human being, so proud of you for everything you went through, all the adversity and making it through and finding that why of helping others. And I know you're gonna do amazing things in the world and help a lot of people, because even just listening to your story, hearing it through for me right now, live, a lot of the parts for the first time, it's making me feel more connected to you, which in my opinion is happiness. Yeah. It's having strong relationships with people. And I think every single person you talk to, and you're going to be able to relate to them so well because you've been through it. You're going to help so many people out there. So again, can't thank you enough. Yeah. For first asking for help back when you were starting in high school and continuing on your journey of asking for help at different times, accepting the help finally. Mm-hmm. Can't thank you enough for turning your life around, hitting that rock bottom, and coming back out on top, to have this new vision of helping others. Can't thank you enough for your time today. So grateful for it. So hopeful that you stay involved with the company, with the community.
I'd love to.
And really excited to see what you keep doing in the future.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm pumped to see what you guys do with everything with this company, man. It's awesome. Absolutely, I love it.